And now, what do I do on this one now? Hit the people?
Answer the call.
Hello?
And then hit the people.
Hello?
Hello? Do we have two people on?
This is Dr. Widmer and Stephanie.
Oh, good. Good. Thank you. And we have Dr. Anderson on still, I think. Okay, we're ready. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Haines EOC Community Town Hall meeting, March 31st, 2020. And those of you who called in most recently, please put your phones on mute because we can hear all the background noise and it interferes with our ability to hear clearly. This is Mayor Hill, and I'm going to go through how we're going to take care of this meeting this evening. I want to thank everybody for calling in. We could hear the beeps, so we know there's a lot of you out there. This meeting will be live streamed on KHNS. The call-in number is 1-800-315-6338. Access code 28851#. Please put your phones on mute.
How do we do that?
It could be pound six. Tell them to try pound six.
Someone said try pound six.
Pound six. And do they have to do pound six to turn it off?
Okay, I'm going to start over again because I want everybody to hear all the information. This meeting is live streamed on KHNS. The call-in number is 1-800-315-6338, access code 28851#. Please listen to the meeting on KHNS and call in with questions. If you are calling in, please mute your phone while you wait for your turn to ask questions. Questions will be answered in alphabetical order according to your last name. Anyone who misses their window, please hold on and we will come back to further questions at the end if we have time. We anticipate this meeting will be no longer than an hour. Excuse me. And now we will hear an overview of the EOC. We will get a medical update, a medevac update, and the manager will speak to us about how the borough is managing the state health mandates and borough resolutions, and then we will open it up for questions. Each of these presentations will not take a very long time, so please listen carefully, and hopefully some of your questions will be answered through the presentations. At this time, I'd like to introduce Carol Ann Wooten with the EOC overview.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So my name is Carol Ann Wooten. I'm the Deputy Incident Commander for the EOC. I'd just like to introduce just a little bit about the Emergency Operations Center. The Emergency Operations Center is a body of volunteers and borough staff who provide support to those who carry out emergency response during a crisis. The National Incident Management System, it's called NIMS, provides the structure and vocabulary for a standardized response to crisis events. The goal is to save lives, stabilize incidents, protect property and the environment. This is an operational group. It is not a political group, but the group provides recommendation to the borough and assembly to assist in determining policies in response to emergencies. The Haines EOC is comprised of the following individuals, and this is just so you know who the people are. The incident commander is our manager, Deborah Schnabel. I am the deputy incident commander. Public information officer is Aleka Fullerton. The safety officer is Scott Bradford. Operations chief is Sean Gaffney. Operations folks are the doers. They support the fire, police, medical, and all first responders fall under these operations section. Our planning chief is Stephen Ock. He does documentation of all activities during the event. And our logistics chief is Ed Coughlin. They are the people who get things, so they do all the supplies and other items needed to respond to a crisis. Our finance chief is Gila Stewart, and finance is pretty self-explanatory. I'd like to share with you just what our objectives are as a body for this particular event in responding to COVID-19. Our number one objective is to ensure the safety of our community members. Number two is contain the spread of COVID-19 by implementing statewide containment and community mitigation strategies and enforcing the state of Alaska health mandates. Number three is support local emergency response operations through the coordination of information, situational reporting, and resource requests. Number four is support search and implementation of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services and Alaska Medical Countermeasures and Management Plan. Five is keep the public, stakeholders, and media informed of operational activities and address rumors or incorrect information in a timely manner. Six is provide mental health support for those who are quarantined. That's something we just added in the last couple of days. We realize that's going to be a stressor. And seven is implement the Alaska State Governor's health mandates. And then just real briefly, giving you some ideas of what the EOC has done since we started operating. We started operating almost a month ago. But our main thing that we've been focusing on is messaging and messaging to the community and beyond regarding how to stay safe during the pandemic. Purchasing, we've done some purchasing for our first responders, particularly looking at a decontamination unit, which is desperately needed in response to a pandemic. Inventory and purchasing of PPE for our first responders as well. We've brought Murmurs tents over from Skagway that are providing some off-site testing and triage for search. They also will be available for other housing situations should the need arise. We've brought in a Red Cross container of cots and blankets for sheltering and supporting search's efforts also to expand their services. And then working with community and supporting community partners. We have a debrief every morning, first thing in the morning, with all of our community partners. That includes the fire department, the police department, the clinic, the search clinic, behavioral health, and the school. And then there's some others also that have participated in that call, just to give us an understanding of what's gone on the night before and allow the team to begin developing responses if needed. We also are working on getting volunteer medical responders as a backfill to support our fire department, and that's one of the things that I want to put out there today. Our operations chief has put together a form that is attached to the borough website, and if anybody in the community has or has had in the past, but maybe expired, medical, EMT, any kind of first responder type skills, and you would be willing to assist should our need arise, and this would be only if something happens and we need to replace people at the fire department, then we would really love to know, have you fill out a form and let us know so we can reach out to you and see if we can put you to work. We're really at the front end of this whole thing. We do not have a live case as of right now, and I think that we're just in the process of gearing up as we prepare for how we're going to handle what's coming. And that's all I have.
Thank you. And now for our medical update, Dr. Noble Anderson.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Yes.
Good. So I'm Dr. Noble Anderson. A lot of you know me when I was medical director of Search, the medical center there. I left that role in 2014, and am now a full-time hospitalist at Bartlett. I've been the medical director for the Haines Volunteer Fire Department and EMS since 2011. And I am primarily on the phone call in that role as the medical director for EMS. I would like to give you an update on EMS and the Haines dispatch response to the COVID-19 pandemic. First of all, I want to acknowledge the Haines EOC for their progressive and rapid actions to limit the spread of the virus to and within Haines. I think their actions have definitely helped flatten the curve. I also want to acknowledge some others. The changes we've made at Haines at a volunteer fire department are not just a result of my efforts, actually probably a minimal in this. I want to acknowledge the impressive teamwork from our volunteer fire department and staff. Many members have come together to put these ideas into place. And I've been consulting with the EMS director, who happens to be my wife, Julie Anderson, as well as Chief Giddings and Assistant Chief Feeks, as well as many of the other members of, and staff, quite regularly and often as we prepare. I want to give you a sort of a frequently asked questions list here so I can maybe answer some of the questions you guys have. So I'm going to kind of run through this in quick bullet format. First, I want you to know that we are, the Haynes Volunteer Fire Department are here for you. That hasn't changed. Everybody is still eager to show up and assist where needed. We may look different when we arrive to your home or scene. You'll see us wearing masks or maybe even breathing through firefighting apparatus and masks. We have new filters that work on those systems. This is to keep our rescuers safe, and it is not meant to be scary or offensive. We will probably ask also that you wear a mask. If you're the one that actually anybody who's being transported will be requested to wear a mask, and we will provide that for you. Another change you may notice is how our dispatchers process incoming 911 calls. They have very specific questions to ask in order to help our responders stay safe. Please stay on the phone with them and be patient and understand that they are asking extra questions for everyone's safety. I would also like to reassure you that HVFD and Search are collaborating in our response and our preparations, and that is going well. Our members are staying up to date. Our HVFD members are staying up to date and learning new skills and ideas, and we're using reliable information sources. We've implemented new and daily training through frequent emails. We're using an HVFD Zoom town hall, and we're also we've initiated an online classroom system that is being updated daily. It's really working well. Our ambulances have been rearranged. They're arranged differently to allow minimal contamination, and they're also easier to decontaminate. But all the necessary equipment is still on board. The previous speaker mentioned some of the personal protective equipment, and we are watching our supplies very closely. We may be asking for community help to create PPE, specifically something like gowns, to protect our members. And I also want to kind of throw out there that if you have unused commercial grade N95 masks or surgical masks and are willing to donate them, please contact our EMS captain, Al Badley. That's something that could definitely help our department. Another thing I want to, this is definitely something new and different. There may be a time when you call 911 and we arrive and then we determine that you are safe to stay home rather than be transported in the ambulance. We've worked with Search and we've adapted CDC and state guidelines to determine when this is safe, and this will be done under consultation with the clinic staff, clinician on duty. That means that if you're safe to stay home, we're going to make sure you do stay home rather than get transported to the clinic. This will likely include a plan for follow-up, specifically follow-up testing at the clinic. Unfortunately, HVFD is not able to perform any kind of COVID-19 testing at this time. A couple other things I just want to quick mention. And this is a request from me and from the fire department. When you're educating yourselves about this virus, please use sources of good and valid information. There's a lot of bad information out there, especially on Facebook. Please use
good sites like HVFD or the borough government Facebook sites. Search also has a Facebook site. The Alaska DHSS, Bartlett Hospital, Search, the World Health Organization, CDC, and the University of Washington all have excellent websites. And our plan is to post this summary of talking points after this. We're going to put it on our HVFD Facebook page, and we'll have links to all of those sites on there. I highly encourage you to read and educate yourself. In closing, our EMS and fire team are preparing to serve our valleys and realize that there is much work still ahead. A big thank you to all of them. They're all volunteers, or most of them are volunteers. We're very, very grateful for them. And a little plug that if you want to join HVFD in the future, please reach out to the HVFD members. The fire hall is closed to the public right now, though, so please call. And if there's anything we can help you with, let us know. And I'll turn it back over to Jan.
Okay. Thank you very much. And now for a medevac update, Julie Anderson.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Great. Hi, everybody. This is Julie Anderson. I'm a volunteer paramedic and EMS director with Team Volunteer Fire Department. A lot of you know me because I used to work in the clinic as a nurse. I'm currently working from Juneau as a flight nurse with Aerials Northwest. And I'm here to speak for commercial medevac services. Our team personally has transported quite a few COVID patients within Washington State under the guidance of infectious disease doctors from the University of Washington. And those protocols and lessons have been shared with other medevac vendors. It's really beautiful that above all else, this is a time of collaboration and shared resources among many entities, including flight teams. Each of the three Alaska medevac vendors who fly in the Haines has a COVID transport plan and preparations in place to fly these patients, including PPE and decontamination of aircraft and crew. It might be reassuring to hear that today I learned that the air in the pressurized aircraft that medevac vendors use is exchanged and filtered every 2 to 2.5 minutes. Some other things that people may have heard or be wondering, yes, we are still transporting patients to all the same facilities that we did before the pandemic. Of course, there are some changes that you may see or hear about include additional screening questions and phone calls, which may add minimal delay to patient transport. You may witness some of these while the crew is at the clinic preparing to transport the patient. The biggest change that you might notice, sadly, is that medevac services are not taking additional riders or escorts, with the exception to allow one caregiver for a child patient. These restrictions are mainly based on the receiving hospitals and their policies. Almost all of the receiving hospitals have a very strict no visitation policy in place. If you are concerned about medevac insurance, there are now options to sign up for medevac insurance at the time that you get medevac. The clinic is familiar with how these processes work for each vendor, and it's just one small peace of mind amid all that's going on. If you're helping someone who's being medevac, please remember to package an ID for them, spare clothes, and a phone charger or tablet device, whatever they use to help communicate. In addition to these essentials, there are little things that you can do to help this person who may feel kind of isolated while they're in the hospital away from home. Think about tucking a little note of encouragement in their bag. And if you include a photo of the person doing something they love, the nurses will visit in their hospital room for the staff to get to know them a little bit better. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Dr. Lilith, we wanted to give you a quick opportunity to say a few words, if you had anything to add.
Sure. Thanks, Jan. Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Widmer. I'm speaking in my capacity as the medical director of the Haines Health Center. I'd first like to just echo Dr. Anderson's gratitude to the EOC and their effort, and also just to every community member who's making sacrifices right now. We appreciate what you're doing. I'd like to just share with you all an update from the clinic. I want you all to know that we are well staffed. We have 3 physicians, 3 nurse practitioners, 10 nurses, 1 clinical assistant / paramedic on staff, all of whom have been working very hard over the past few weeks to prepare and adapt to some pretty major operations changes. We are preparing. We have been doing regular case simulations, some of which have involved the HBFD. We've also been doing training sessions. This has been ongoing since about February. We are transforming our internal operations and now have 2 ICU level rooms that can handle critically ill COVID patients until they're transported. We're working with the EOC to define an alternative capacity location to care for a potential surge of patients if the need were to arise. At the clinic, we have an abundant supply of PPE as well as testing kits. Consortium-wide, we have approximately 1,700 testing kits. We are testing according to CDC and Alaska state guidelines, of which they're changing as this pandemic evolves within the state. I want to assure everyone that anyone who needs a COVID-19 testing will get a test. So far, Surge has conducted tests in every Southeast community, and all tests thus far have come back negative. If there is a positive test, this will be communicated by the State of Alaska Department of Health, which is the standard throughout the state, and that's really just to protect privacy of patients. And I just want to close by publicly recognizing and thanking the clinic staff. I don't know if there's any of them on the phone, but they have been working very hard to prepare to take the best care of patients that we possibly can and keep themselves safe while doing so. So thank you.
Thank you. And now our borough manager, Deborah Schnabel.
Thank you, Mayor Hill. I'm Deborah Schnabel, the commander and the Haynes borough manager also. Thank you to all that have spoken previously. I think those that are listening were all keenly.
Could you please put your phones on mute? There is a lot of feedback, and we can't hear the speaker, and I'm in the room with her.
Okay, my purpose in this town hall meeting is to try my best to allay our anxiety about the coronavirus entering and spreading in our community, and assure all of us that the borough is meeting the state's health mandates. To our knowledge, there is no active case in the community right now, but we do know from our reading and our watching throughout the planet that this is carried by people. And so the virus, should it enter the community, will come on other people. I'm being told to move to a different location.
So that you can use that still, but use that as be closer to that, because that's what transmits to the conference call. Thank you.
I'm sorry.
Those of us on the phone cannot hear what the manager is saying. Please have her move closer to the microphone.
She's not talking. She's moving.
Okay. I think that was Zephyr, Assembly Member Sydney. So would you please tell me, can you hear me now, Zephyr?
No.
Yes, I can. Thank you very much.
Okay, should I use this microphone?
Both
microphones.
Yes.
Okay, I thought that
Thank
would
you.
Provide feedback, but apparently not. Thank you very much. My purpose in the town hall meeting is to try my best to allay our anxiety about the coronavirus entering the community. All of the people that have spoken previous to me have been very good about telling us how we will meet the virus and deal with cases when they are here, if there is here. So I'm not saying that it is not here, but I'm saying we are not aware of any cases right now. The virus will arrive on somebody coming from out of town. We know that. It could be a resident returning home. It could be a visitor coming from out of town. The reason why quarantining is so important is because we recognize that the virus will be coming in to the community from somebody from without. It's not unlike the idea that smallpox was introduced to the indigenous people through Europeans entering the community. So if you get that picture in your head, I think that quarantining becomes a lot more understandable about why it's important. We want to ensure that anyone that comes into the community is not carrying the virus. Okay, so travel between communities is prohibited. This is by mandate 12 of Governor Dunleavy. So travel between communities in Alaska is prohibited except as necessary to meet critical personal needs of work and critical infrastructure jobs. And the mandate states that no one traveling for critical reasons may be subjected to quarantine. So that puts us in a position where we are basically asking for voluntary adherence to this mandate. The borough currently has registration papers at all ports of entry in our community, and we have signs. I hope you've seen them. We've got plywood signs, we have electronic signs, we have posters, we have KHNS notices. We are basically in the newspaper. We are doing our best to get information out to all travelers that they need to register if they enter our community and proceed directly into quarantine. So the fact that this is a voluntary process at this point in time does make things a little bit difficult for us, but we are meeting the state guidelines, and we are using the state as our guide in how we are meeting that mandate. It does not. A lot of people want to know, well, why haven't we closed our town to incoming people? I think it's an interesting question because all of us recognize that it would be great if we could do that. However, Haines, by state mandate right now, and actually it's the attachment B to state mandate 12, Haines does not qualify as a community that can be more restrictive than the state. And the reason is that we are on a road system. Now, I know that this can sound ironic that we want to close traffic, but we don't want to intercept on the road system. So we are bound by state mandate to proceed on a voluntary basis with registration of people. And then we will follow up when people give us our registration. We have boxes around the community, one at the airport, one at the ferry terminal, one at the administration building, and one at the border, where these registration documents will be deposited and they will be picked up, and we will follow through in asking the people who have registered what they are doing just to maintain contact with them and ensure that they are engaged in the quarantine process and that they are given any and all the support that our community can give them in meeting the quarantine guidelines. I do want to address, we are aware that the construction season is coming on quickly, or at least we hope so. So construction workers, whether they be on the highway, whether they are meeting the construction with the construction of our harbor project here in Haines. Construction workers are exempted from the quarantine because they are considered working on essential infrastructure. But nonetheless, we do ask that there be a voluntary registration, and we be aware of who is on the work crews, that we know that the businesses that employ these people have a plan of protection that we can approve to recognize that they are aware of our rules for sheltering in place and practicing hygienic actions. So that is our process or our MO on that. We are aware that the people employed right now in the mining industry that work at both Kensington and in Greens Creek have instituted a change in their schedule that will allow them to work at the mine and come home and adhere to the two-week quarantine while they are at home. So we are aware that they are also being monitored by their employers for temperature and signs of illness. So we feel comfortable that that's being followed. We do ask that if you are aware of people who are in the community that are do not appear to be engaged in essential infrastructure, that you let us know, and our police department will take on the educational and the contact with those individuals to inform them of the mandate and to inform them of what the consequences of not following that mandate might be. Our approach right now is to be informational and educational, and that is what is being directed to us by the state, and that's how we are enforcing right now. There are governmental functions in the community that continue on. I hope all recognize that our water department, our sewer department, our public works department, our harbors are all involved in critical infrastructure. Additionally, of course, the government is engaged in enforcement, in fire and emergency response. So a large part of our public workforce is still on the job. There are some that are not on the job, but that does not include our educational people. I do want to just call out for those of you I know that are parents, you're keenly aware that that the school facility is closed, but the delivery of educational services is ongoing. And I do want to take my hat off to Superintendent Roy Getchell and his team, who have done an extraordinary job. It's my understanding that our school district leads the state in getting our educational services delivered in a non-contact environment, almost 99% electronically. And hats off to AP&T for helping to make that happen. Let's see, I think that we have several questions that have come through that I know need to be answered. Most of them really have to do with why the borough isn't more strict in its apparent enforcement of the quarantine, and I just want to assure you that we are adhering to the state guidelines. Speak louder. We are adhering to the state guidelines in enforcing the Mandate 12. I'm sorry if you haven't heard a lot of what I have said up until now, but I will look forward to answering your questions that are presented here or by email. The borough EOC has provided several locations and ways that questions can come forward. One thing I do want to say, because this is very important to me, that it not be missed. Those of you that are using sanitary wipes, which I'm sure is everybody in this community, please put the wipes in the trash, not the toilet. This is very damaging to our sewer system. Those do not biodegrade. They plug up systems, and I really, really beg the last thing that we want in the middle of any kind of possible virus epidemic is to have our sewer system not working. So if there's anything that I'd like to emphasize more than quarantine, it would be that. And then be safe, be healthy, and shelter in place. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And once again, I'm going to remind people, we can hear kids talking in the background and lots of background noise, and it's interfering. We're getting texts from people. Every one of us is getting texts, so please mute your phones if it's not your turn to talk. Okay, and now we'll start the question time. So if your last name, and I'm going to ask you, please keep your questions concise. We don't need a lot of explanation. We want to get as many questions answered as we can. And so if your last name starts with A, B, or C, this is your opportunity to speak up. And I'd like to have you say who you are so I can jot your names down real quick. Anyone with a last name starting with A, B, or C? Hearing none, we'll go on to D, E, F.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
This is Christy
Okay, go ahead, Christy.
I would like to know if we have ventilators here in Haines, and if you know how many ventilators are at Bartlett.
All right, I can speak to the Haines Health Center. We have two ventilators.
Okay, thank you.
And this is Dr. Anderson. I can tell you that Bartlett has 9 critical care beds and 12 ventilators at the moment. We have a couple on order. We're hoping to increase that number.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else in DEF? Okay, we'll move on to GHI. JKL. MNO. PQR.
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
This is Heidi Robichaux. And I wonder if you could just speak to what is happening with the food bank locally here.
I can go ahead and answer that. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Go ahead.
So your question, I just want to make sure I heard it completely. Your question is what's going on with our local food bank?
Yes. How is the information being transmitted throughout the community to people who need it?
So I had a conversation yesterday with Captain Woods from the Salvation Army. And they are—they have a shipment of food coming in from Anchorage. They are experiencing an increase in the number of people who are asking for boxes, but they're doing their best to take care of what they have. And then we're also—I think as we start seeing a more of a need, that will continue to grow. But Salvation Army is the one who's handling our food bank. And they are the ones that are responsible for that.
Okay, and I have another follow-up on that. Maybe this is for Deborah, but how is Haines at this point dealing with people who cannot pay their city water or electric bills?
Heidi, the Haynesboro recently, excuse me. Now I have all of them. Okay, I have 3 microphones now, so I hope you can all hear me. The Haynesboro currently has a code that has been waived. The waiver will suspend the closure or the cutting off of the water supply for non-payment of the water bill. And I cannot tell you how long that suspension will go on, but we also will waive any of the interest fees that would normally collect on an unpaid bill. So the idea is that you will still be billed for water. There will be a point in time in which you can enter into a payment plan with the borough for how you're going to pay your water bill, but your water will not be turned off, and you will not be accruing interest on your unpaid bill. That's the answer. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. And anyone else in the PQR?
Yes. Randy. This is Ben Larson. I'm in the L category. Can I talk or did I miss my opportunity?
Yeah, we will come back and try to catch you after we're at the end of the alphabet.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, PQR, I heard somebody.
Mandy Ramsey.
Okay, go ahead, Mandy.
My question is, question is, I would like Deborah to please repeat the information that she said about construction workers for the harbor and the road about their exemption from quarantine. Could you please clarify that, please?
Yes, the state mandate provides an exemption from the quarantine for people who are working in the industries identified as critical infrastructure, harbors and public infrastructure, capital projects that build critical infrastructure are exempt. So the people that are coming into our community to work are exempt from a quarantine, except that the Haynesboro has asked for a plan of protection so that employers will provide for us a plan of protection which identifies how they are going to direct their employees while they are working in the community and living in the community. That plan has to be approved by the manager, who is intensely interested in all aspects of our shelter in place and hygiene and sanitary conditions. So that plan of protection must meet the requirements to protect not only the employee, but the people that they interface with in the community and on the job. I hope that's satisfactory.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else in PQR?
In the R, I just would like to understand more, because if our community is going to be protected and everyone else who is coming into the community is deemed to go into quarantine, shouldn't that be for anybody coming here?
The problem that we have, the status at this time is that the state of Alaska mandate number 12 does set for the community, all communities in the state, that the mandates issued by the state will be observed. The mandate does exempt construction workers involved and are engaged in essential infrastructure. That is defined by the state. So at this point, at this time, what we are doing as a borough is requiring a plan of protection for the industries that come into the community, that I'll be contacting the employer to describe for us what the plan is for their employees. And it will be for reviewed with the intent to provide protection for the community and for the employees.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else in the PQR? STU? VW? XYZ? We'll go back to L.
Yes, hello, this is Ellen Larson. And my question is the test the only way to determine if someone is a carrier of the virus?
What are medical people? Dr. Anderson? Or Lilith? Or
Lilith? Do you want to feel that, or should I?
Either. Go ahead.
And the answer to that is not as straightforward as we'd like. Being a carrier is not very well defined currently. We don't know how many or who are asymptomatic. It's not a virus that it really has what we would define as a quote carrier state, end quote. When you think of a carrier, you think of like a virus that lives with you for your life. For example, if you get chickenpox, you carry the varicella zoster virus the rest of your life, and it can come back as shingles. This coronavirus has a very limited lifespan in humans. We are relatively certain that after symptoms have gone away, that you're no longer shedding the virus. I think the longest recorded has been 8 days, but most people are not shedding any virus after 72 hours.
I'm wondering if this person is asymptomatic, how do you know if they're a carrier or not? Is the test the only way?
Correct. The test is the only way. However, the test is not very sensitive for those people because they may have the virus. They may be an asymptomatic individual and be shedding minimal amount of virus. And the test doesn't detect it very well, none of the tests. And I will say that so I know here at Bartlett, we are currently using two different testing modalities. One is we are sending tests to the state if they meet state criteria. And they can also send tests to a commercial lab, such as LabCorp or Quest. That's a test that has to be paid for by the patient or by the patient's insurance company. The state is, I believe, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, where the state's paying for any of the state-run tests. The criteria for those can be different. However, they're making rapid advances, and we should have rapid testing available hopefully within a month's time. I don't know how Search is going to roll that out or not. That's what the promise is from up above, the CDC and the current administration are saying. And I know companies like Abbott and a couple others have developed a rapid test that may be able to run on our current flu test machine. So I'm trying to be positive. I think there's some rapid advances coming. I've sort of gone on a rabbit trail, but I think there's no way to answer the question, or no way to know who those people are that are asymptomatic and are shedding the virus.
Thank you.
So there wouldn't be any point in testing everybody who comes to town and everybody in town to find out who has it and who's a carrier, and then we know who to isolate because if they're a carrier.
Correct. Unfortunately,
Ellen, he's trying to answer you. Would you please let him answer?
Sure. Oh,
sorry.
So, unfortunately,
I can hear. The connection's not very good.
Oh, okay. Unfortunately, when someone would come to town, the turnaround for the test currently is about 4 to 5 days. So, the test gets sent out. And the results would come back probably, especially with Haynes and its distance, 5 days later. And the sensitivity of that test, they've, especially in an asymptomatic individual, they're predicting it's only between 60 and 70%, meaning that it misses positive people about a third of the time. So the test is not very helpful if you were testing asymptomatic people. If you tested everybody that came in, you still miss one third of them that would still be positive, and we wouldn't know.
Thank you.
Hopefully the test will get better.
That really helped. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay. Sure.
And now I'm going to go back up to the top of the alphabet and see if anybody called in a little bit late. So if your last name starts with ABC, any question?
Yeah, I've got a question, Jen, for Kyle Clayton.
Okay, go ahead, Kyle.
This is for Lily. I was wondering if the Search Consortium would consider having a local spokesperson time that I feel like the community would benefit from having you or another search, Haynes Search Clinic staff, be a spokesperson. Is that something that's been discussed, or is that something you could talk about?
Hey Kyle, thanks for your question. I can certainly ask that, but I'd have to get back to you on it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else in the ABC? DEF? GHI? JKL?
I have a question.
Okay. Your name, please.
Hi, this is Ron. Yeah, hey, this is Ron Jackson. The borough has a form out right now that has questions like, where were you before you got here for travelers coming in? Were you staying? Just a whole bunch of questions anyway, trying to identify something. And it wasn't clear what the intent of that form was, and I wonder if you could answer what is the purpose of that form and what will the borough do with that information?
Hi, Ron. This is Deborah Schnabel. The registration form is, as you probably know, and as I said before, it's voluntary. We try to put them at the ports of entry where we think people will see them. And there is one at the administration office for those that overlook them when they come through a port, so you can go to the borough offices and fill it out. The purpose of the form is so that we know who has come into the community. And just to repeat, we know the virus will come into the community on somebody from without. And so when the registration is filled out and deposited, a member of the EOC collects that deposit on the papers on a nightly basis, and we identify those people, and we'll do a callback because I believe that the phone numbers addresses are listed. You have to register, and there'll be a follow up to determine, just for informational purposes, for helpfulness, and to identify and confirm that those people understand that a quarantine is in order for them and that they must adhere to it. The EOC members of the EOC or the police department will give the information to that person to help and assist them if they have any problems or misunderstandings about what a quarantine means. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thanks, Deb.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else in the JKL?
This is CJ, and I don't have a question, but I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank everybody on the EOC so very, very much. You have worked really hard, and also everybody that presented today, because your information was very clear and understandable, and I know you have all been working super hard as well. So just thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else in JKL? MNO?
This is Tom Morfitt.
Go ahead, Tom.
It seems to me that this exception from quarantine for construction workers is going to be kind of sensitive to the community. With borough leaders, particularly the borough leaders who are on the teleconference, be willing to ask the state if communities can determine which construction projects are essential infrastructure. In other words, it just off the top of my head, it seems that the harbor project, we've been waiting on that for 40 years. We're servicing what we need servicing right now. What makes that essential infrastructure? It seems that should be a call by the community rather than the governor. I'm wondering if our local elected leaders would be able to be willing to express to the governor, communities should be able to determine what falls into this
take that. Thanks, Tom. I think that that's a legitimate question, and it certainly can be followed through. I think it's probably a lot. It also has legal ramifications in the sense that the borough is currently committed contractually to accomplish certain projects at a certain price by a certain time. All that would be subject to a renegotiation. So I recognize that we're all in a declared emergency, which certainly heightens awareness and does sometimes allow for things to change. I think that, thank you for the question, and I think that probably the EOC can address that, how we might go after an answer for that. And I think that Deputy Commander Carolyn Wooten would like to speak.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to let you know that I think a part of the balance in trying to manage our response to a pandemic is that we are taking drastic measures that are economically very difficult. And I think as a governor, I can't say that this is exactly what he's thinking, but this is something I think certainly is being considered, is the fact that in spite of the fact that we are shutting, we're basically shutting down our states and our communities, but the economy still needs something. And we are trying to flatten the curve, as you hear all the time, but we don't want to kill the economy if we can help it. We want to have something going on. So the governor has decided that there are critical types of work that still need to be done in order to support the work of this state. And his mandate is that includes construction of critical infrastructure. And he listed it. There's actually so many of them on the list, I don't even remember them all. But the ports and harbors, definitely one of them. Roads is another. And so...
But this is expansion. The harbor, we're expanding now. And we went up until right now, that harbor services. So it seems to me that... And also,
we know that, Tom. Please let them answer your question. We know that.
Right. Okay. So, Tom, this is Deborah again. Thank you. I think that the rationale behind your question is understood, and I think that you've introduced it to the community to be thinking about that, and I'm sure that our leaders are hearing your question, and it can be condensed and directed to the state officials that might assist us in giving us whatever guidance we can get in how to address that.
Thank you. Anyone else in the MNO? Moving on, PQR. STU. If you're doing your dishes, would you please mute your phone? VW?
Yes, I have questions. Joni Wagner.
Go ahead, Joni.
This kind of coincides with the workers coming in. What about their families? Will they be, some of them bring their families with them? Will they be quarantined 2 weeks?
This is Deborah. No one has yet submitted a plan of protection, but I will tell you that we recognize that if employers are allowing their employees to bring their families, as the manager who is reviewing the plan of protection, I will assure you that the families of employees in construction will not be exempted from the quarantine.
Okay, thank you, Deborah.
Just 1 minute, Carolyn wants to say something.
And I think it's really important for everybody to understand that even though the workers are exempt because they're going to work, once they're off work, they are supposed to abide by quarantine rules. They are not allowed to run about town and act like they've been here their whole lives. I mean, I think that is a clear part of the governor's mandate, is even though they're coming here to work, they're here to do a job. They go to work, they do their job, and then they go home and quarantine the rest of the time. I hope that helps.
Thank you. Anyone else in the VW category?
I have someone in the R's, please.
We're just about to the Z, so then I'll go back to R. We'll have enough time for that one. XYZ? Okay, last question. We'll go up to the R's.
Yeah, this is Scott Ramsey, and I just my comment is towards the person who was considering killing the economy, and I guess my comment is more I recognize that kill the economy and the importance of having economic drivers, but this is what we're talking about is for people outside the economy coming in to get those jobs. Is there any way that we could have mitigation in place that would offer those same jobs to qualified candidates here in Hayes, and then we would be able to mitigate these, the obvious concerns the community has?
Yeah, Scott, actually, that's a really good question, and I'm glad you asked it, because that my other hat in the borough is working as contracts and grants administrator, so I work directly with our public facilities director in managing these contracts, and that is actually one of the things that we have asked, is that they make use of our workforce that we have here that we know many of them are not employed. We think that's a win for them, because then they don't have to deal with the whole quarantine thing, but also it's a win for our community, and we really do want to encourage them to do that. But that said, we can't force them to do that.
Thank you for that clarification. Okay, we are at 6:35, and we've gone through the alphabet twice. If you are sitting around this evening and you think of new questions, we have an EOC email site. It's eoc@haines.ak.us. Send your questions there, and we will get them answered at that site. And those questions that we've received today that didn't get answered, we will try to get those answered on that same email site also. And I want to just say thank you to everyone that has listened this evening. Thank you to everyone that was here to help answer questions. Thank you for your patience as we tried this for our first time. We'll try to perfect it if we decide we're going to do this kind again. And be sure to use the disinfecting wipes and put them in the trash. Do not flush them down the toilet. It's an important thing to remember. It will save some of our infrastructure and cost us less money. So thank you again to everyone that participated this evening. We'll be probably doing more of these as time goes on. Thank you for following the rules. Stay safe and healthy, and stay home. Good night, everyone.
Thank you, everybody.
No, the interference with the